Hi there. Come up on the porch. We're just sitting here watching it rain and talking about Louisiana. I'm Bruce McGee.
And I'm Steve Payne.
And this is the Louisiana Anthology Podcast, episode 431, for August 21st, 2021.
Welcome back.
Today we talked to Scott Boatwright, who has been a Ruston journalist for decades, and he's recently moved over to the Lincoln Parish Journal as the publisher and managing editor, and I believe it's all online. Am I correct about that, Stephen?
Yeah, in fact, he'll say this, I think he says it in the interview, but I know he had said it to me in a series of texts. It's kind of a part of an online chain, if you can imagine. They start in Natchitoches or someplace, but there's one serving. Yeah, there's one serving Natchitoches Parish. There's one serving, I think, Jackson Parish. So it would be Jonesboro and Weston and Chatham and all that area.
Tough for local journalism right now. So we wish Scott all the best with this, because we need local news. Rachel Maddow points out the necessity of it all the time. So we hope this new project does well.
It's the only way to keep your officials accountable to the people, you know.
Right. So we'll be starting our talk with him in a few minutes. But first, this week in Louisiana history.
So let's see. My screen, as usual, disappeared again. So this week in Louisiana history, August 21st, 1769, Governor Alejandro O'Reilly arrests leaders of the revolution that ousted Governor Ulloa. Did I say that correctly this time, Ulloa?
I think so, but
Ulloa.
You're asking the wrong guy. I learned that from you, I think the L.
We need to bring your pal Greg on, your neighbor up there in GTM, to do the Spanish for us, you know, Greg or Leslie.
Leslie would know it, too. Well, and now for this week in New Orleans history, August 21st, 2005, was the last day for Jazzland / Six Flags over New Orleans. And this was, of course, because of Katrina, and the place flooded. And it's just kind of this eerie ghost of a amusement park now. I went there once. I went once when my older sons were little. And at the time, they had no trees, and it was really hot. All I remember about it. Now for this week in Louisiana.
So this week in Louisiana, we profile things to do with kids in central Louisiana. A mingling of cultures, wealth of history, and beautiful landscape all make the Crossroads region a hit with parents and children alike. Here are some of our top family-friendly picks in central Louisiana. The swath of land cutting through central Louisiana is both an outdoor paradise and a keeper of history. Take your little ones camping, fishing, and hiking in some of the best wilderness in the state, then drop in to see rowdy alligators or a fish hatchery. This is home also to the oldest town of the Louisiana Purchase. The Crossroads region brings history to life at plantations, cotton gins, and a forestry center. Of course, we're talking about Natchitoches. And also the Longleaf Vista Trail is down. Have we been there? No, I've been there with my mother. The Longleaf Vista Trail out west of Alexandria.
I don't think we've done that.
It's not as rugged as it is down around Driscoll Mountain, but it's some of the most rugged territory in the state. It's that Coosacchie Hills region.
Yeah.
And you can see for miles and miles that there's promontories down there. It's kind of a nice view. And I think the trail is maybe 13 or 14 miles through the woods, through the country.
Well, and I would add,
drive a lot of it too.
Yeah, I would add my favorite stuff when my son and his mom were living there was they've got a children's museum in Alexandria. They've got a nice zoo, recently refurbished and seems to be pretty well financed for a regional zoo like that, and a nice splash pad near the zoo, so, you know, to put your kids swimming kind of stuff on and go to that during this kind of year. It's a good break from the heat.
A very welcome break at that. Jeez.
Oh, my goodness. Now, this week's postcard from Louisiana, I listened to the band play at the Funky 544 on Bourbon.
Come on, one, two, three, four.
interview with Scott Boatwright.
I'm Bruce McGee.
And I'm Steve Payne.
And we're here today with Scott Boatwright. Welcome, Scott.
How are y'all doing?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Wonderful.
Nice
to have a former colleague on the show with us.
Yeah, I wish we could be together in person. I'm out of town right now, but slowly people are starting to get shots and being able to meet up again. And you are one of our local interviews. One thing we wanted to do when we started the project was to highlight North Louisiana some and let people know there is stuff going on in North Louisiana from time to time.
It is happening here, and it's getting better, like you said, with COVID. I think we've turned the corner, and we just have to keep pushing forward.
So you are a local reporter, and you've recently started a new project. Why don't you tell us about that and where folks can find it?
Well, I am I am pretty much it, other than I've brought in a advertising representative, long-time Lincoln Parish advertising expert Jeannie McCartney has jumped on board. The Lincoln Parish Journal, we're a strictly online, five-day-a-week news source. We publish at 5 a.m. every morning. And what our goal is to do is provide the quickest, most thorough local news in a free format. I mean, we do not charge. You can sign up at You can go to www.lincolnparishjournal.com, hit join, get a daily email address around 6 a.m., 6:30 a.m., even though we publish at 5 a.m., it takes me a little while to get the rest of it sorted out and those emails sent out, and you will get one email a day. We're not going to your inbox and find out everything you need to know about Ruston, news-wise, hard news, sports, just happenings, events around town.
Well, that's good. So I'm always curious about the details. What platform are you using? Are you
We publish through WordPress.
Okay. My friend Lamar White uses a WordPress website.
It's very simple. Our website could be, some people ask me, well, you've got talent, you've got the skills, why don't you make it a little flashier? Our website, our look is designed for cell phones. We realize that's what people use to read it now. And,
right.
Actually, if you have a flashy website, they actually don't translate very well sometimes to cell phones. So ours is designed strictly for cell phones. You can use your home computer to read it and all, but it's definitely designed, the whole look is for cell phones.
Well, that really tracks with what we did. We started our project 2012, not that long after I got a smartphone. I'd had your old flip phone that, you know, you could make calls or you could text.
I kept one of those until about 2016, Bruce, so I guess. Well, I'm a dinosaur.
I know, right? Well, I upgraded, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11. I wasn't the first wave. I think I had the iPhone 2. My website I had since 1996. And the second I tried to use with my iPhone, I realized it's obsolete. Like, you know, it stuck out on each side of the screen. You couldn't see anything unless you zoomed in. It was just designed, you know, it's totally obsolete. And when we started not only the podcast, but the anthology website, you know, like there are a lot of websites that had nice websites until the iPhone came along, like Gutenberg. It was great on a big monitor, but you put it on a cell phone, it's practically unusable. So,
right.
We did the analytics, and anywhere from 40 to 50% of our visits are from people using a smartphone. And a few people use a tablet and the rest use a desktop, you know, or laptop, you know, traditional. But you got to think about the people with the iPhone. So that was smart.
Who would have thought three old dudes 10 years ago would end up doing what we're doing today. But it is. What
I know,
doing.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, media is moving online, and that's both journalism and stuff like what we're doing. And, you know, like when we first sat down, it was like, well, are we going to make a traditional print book? Are we going to make it an e-book? And I already had a website, and I kind of knew what I was doing there. So we decided to make it a website. And we have, right now we're running about 6,000 to 7,000 hits a month. It's the height of school in the fall. We were getting up over 8,000 visits a month, which for a site like ours is pretty good.
That's very good. We've been very pleased with the numbers that we've seen over the last month as this thing has grown and I've kind of taken over and run with it. It actually existed for about a month and a half before I took over. And, But I bring, and I don't want to sound like I'm shooting my own horn or anything, but in a way I am. I bring a long-time journalistic ability to it that had not really been present before, where
right.
hard news mixed in with all the things people want to know about, like the DEA National Prescription Drug Drop-Off Day tomorrow. That's in the Lincoln Parish Journal today. Closing update about the weather, the severe weather that we have potentially coming in starting this evening.
Oh, my goodness. We used to not have to worry about tornadoes and hurricanes. And all of a sudden, you know, like we're getting both.
As well as a story on Bruce Cowan here in town, who last night at the age of 80 received and was officially inducted as an Eagle Scout. That's a very interesting read. That happened just last night at the Gospel.
Did you cover the, or were you on the ground or off, you know, launched or whatever when Tech got tapped to be in the NIT this year, the Tech Men's Club?
Yes, I was.
Because Tech didn't do too badly in it. Didn't they end up winning the consolation game maybe?
No, they won the consolation game, correct. They made it to the Final Four, and they who did they beat? Mississippi State?
I think that's right.
But, yes, they won the consolation game. And sports, because of my background, working for both Tech and Grambling's athletic department for years, and being a local sports writer for way more years than that, that's obviously one of my fortes. But the legendary Wiley Hilburn taught me early on that he told me it all. Don't confine yourself to just sports. Learn about all of it, and that's what I've always done.
Yeah, we were lucky. Only like 2 or 3 months after we started our podcasting, Stephen kept calling Wiley, and he finally met us over at Huddle House, and we interviewed him for
It's close to 2 hours. We got what we think is the final interview with him before he passed on.
It's
an amazing man.
Wiley liked to do the interview. He didn't want to give the interview. So there are very few times that he actually, you know, like, and here he is on tape, you know, kind of talking about his career. You know.
We had an advantage because Bruce's dad knew him, and then he knew most of my family. I mean, my dad and at least two of his brothers, I think, of his three brothers. So, I mean, he knew a lot of both, you know, both our families. So it helped. Plus, we were both Tech alums like you, and so
right.
all that helped us to, you know, finagle that interview with him.
Let's go back and talk about how you got into journalism. Are you originally from Ruston?
No, I am my roots are here, but I'm a true born and raised New Orleanian. I was born in the West Bank, now Algiers in New Orleans.
Wow.
My father was from Ruston via Farmerville. He grew up the first 9 years in Farmerville. Because of health reasons, and you have to realize families back then. My dad's mother was 44 when he was born.
Oh, wow.
So by the time he got to be 9, she had some health issues, but he had a sister 21 years older, and they actually moved in with her here in Austin. And so he always considered himself a Russonian. He graduated from Ruston High School. In fact, I'm very proud. He's got a picture. He's part of a state championship team picture up in the Children's Fieldhouse. Dick was a really good friend of him.
Yeah.
I still talk to Dan Childress all the time. And my mom was from Quinton.
Right.
My
parents, so what year would your dad have graduated? I'm
he graduated in he graduated in 1957.
Okay.
He went into the Army. He graduated high school in 50. Went to the Army and played Army club ball, which back then was huge. Think about the original MASH movie and how they were
right
playing there even overseas. Well, the bases here in the States played each other big time. I mean, it was almost like the NFL, which was very small then, the
right
farm system. And so my dad, because he was a good football player, he played football and he taught paratrooping along bases along the East Coast. He never went to Korea during the Korean War. Simply because of football. G.I. Bill, after 3 years, he opted out, came back, and Chip Childress got him on the what was then the Northeast State College, I believe, football team.
Okay.
And he played football a year there, but he met my mother. She was she doesn't like calling it ULM, but she's a, you know, you guys.
It's still Northeast to her, huh?
Right, exactly. And so she was the same age, but they were in college only a year together, and she graduated. So they ended up getting married. They went to her first teaching job was in Orange, Texas, so he went to Lamar Tech for a year there. And then she got a job in her own town at Quitman High School, and they moved up here, and my dad transferred up here and did what he always wanted to do and graduated from Tech. He grew up preaching Tech to me. He wanted me to go to Tech so bad. So, of course, when I graduated high school, I went to LSU for a couple of years.
You got to get away.
And had fun, loved going to the athletic events there. But being in classes with 500 or more people was not that much fun.
Right.
And I quickly realized that. But second try, I looked at the journalism department, both at Tech and NLU. I liked Tech better, and the rest is history.
Well, and at the time, Wiley Hilburn was he the dean or the head of the department? I don't know how it worked over there.
He was the head of the department. And the thing is, Wiley grew up with a cousin of mine, that cousin being probably old enough to be my father. But, yeah. So they were good friends. So Wiley knew of my family and my father. He remembered my father. And it worked out tremendously for me.
Did you work on the Tech Talk?
I sure did.
You know they quit publishing that.
That's when I was actually.
Is it strictly an online publication now? Or?
It
was. It's
defunct
now.
It is defunct now.
Really? I didn't know that.
I taught at Tech from 2011 to 2018. I didn't have a PhD, but at that time, in 2011, I already had more than 25 years experience. And
right.
Well-known experience. So they brought me on board, and I taught all the basic writing courses and oversaw, worked on the yearbook and the Tech Talk, neither of which they do anymore.
They don't do the yearbook either? I was unaware of that. What were the reasons for the cut?
I think the students, a lot of them didn't like the fee, and the other fees were going up. I don't really know.
That fee is barely noticeable in the.
They talked about doing it online, but I don't think they do that even with the yearbook. I know they don't with the Tech Talk. It's just on now. Which is
well. How do they give them the experience they need, those young journalists in training?
Interns and classes, we're using now an intern. There's still ways to do that, but it's not what I remembered. I mean, but yet, you know, we were down first floor of Kenny Hall down there, really the base in the quadrangle side. Well, that's all gone now. That's all human resources now.
Yeah. They moved all over to TTM.
Exactly.
Well, and I think it may typify what's happening to journalism in general in our
country. It is. And part of their deal was, and they also stressed the online and social media, which the Lincoln Parish Journal, we're huge. We realize the importance and the use of Facebook and of Twitter. And we gain a lot of followers that way also. That's part of the reason we've had, you're talking about page hits, clicks, whatever. Over the past month, I know we've had, I think, as of this morning, 13,000. We're not doing bad. Not doing bad at all.
And y'all have been going how long?
It started in, I don't know the exact, Steve, but around January 20th, I came aboard the second week of March.
So still pretty early on, you jumped on the train, so to speak.
And as I said earlier, I did make a big difference, I know, because I brought a lot more local hard news as opposed to just press releases that they could get from whatever source. I've got many years invested in Lincoln Parish. I've considered it home more than 35 years. And as I told you about my background, I spent summers up here. I learned to drive in Jonesboro and Ruston. Mainly because my parents thought it was a much safer place to set me free and let me try to learn to drive.
Mm-hmm.
This has always been home to me. Even growing up, came up going to Tech games all the time. I had an aunt who taught at Grambling in the early 70s. I first met Doug Williams and Eddie Robinson when I was 8th, 9th grade. I had my aunt's son, my cousin, brought me to a preseason practice and introduced me. And Coach Ryle was wonderful. He's exactly who you thought he would have been in 1977. I've been very fortunate in the ties I've had in Lincoln Parish all my life. I love it here. Do not want to leave.
That's good, and we need good reporting. And does this cover Lincoln Parish, or do you have a wider North Indiana?
We focus on Lincoln Parish because the Lincoln Parish Journal, and I am the owner, Boatwright Media owns it, but it's like owning a local McDonald's franchise. There's a chain of these popping up all across North Louisiana, and the goal is to keep it going down to South Louisiana. The Natchez Journal is the oldest. It's been around for years, but over the past year, they've branched out. There's a Jackson Parish Journal, you know, the Jackson Independent.
Oh, so they all have journal on the tail end of name or whatever.
Correct. We are sister companies or publications.
Oh, cool.
And work together and can share resources and that kind of thing, which is important.
Lamar, way back, and, he was our first online journalist. He started out with Ben Lamar and then
gradually broadened out. I wasn't sure if you had any plans like that.
Y'all still there?
Kind of lost you there.
Yeah, we're here.
Okay,
very good. So how tell everybody how you got pulled into this, because you were telling me this night before last, and I thought it was pretty interesting. What exactly happened to kind of, you know, get you hooked up with Lincoln Parish Journal?
Well, the leader, for reasons I'm not going to get into, decided they wanted to go a different direction after many, many years there. And actually, the people at the Journal already know me. They had done their homework and had checked around and had asked people, talked to people here, who could we get to do this? And from what I've been told, my name kept popping up. So to get him, you're set. And so they approached me, and the timing was perfect. The timing was incredible. And it's for the best in heaven. I didn't think I'd be 57 years old leading the charge into a new future for Lincoln Parish Journalism, but I am, and we're determined to be the first and foremost source of news for the parish.
What about, like, YouTube or a podcast? Do I have any, like, you know, multi-platform things are doing or want to do?
Not quite at this point, but the goal, the plan is to start building, televising, videoing live, city council meetings, police jury meetings, that kind of thing early on.
Mm-hmm.
We have posted some video of the past two weekends I've posted. And because of social media, I'm not trying to take over podcasters, so I'm not going for hours at a time. But I think last week I did about 3 or 4 minutes of Buddy Ball of Rustin, and those are big. People love watching those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing a lot of that, and we'll continue doing more and more as we grow.
There really is a need for that, like Bruce was saying, for the local news. I mean, because there's so many communities and local, you know, municipalities and counties and parishes where they've lost the only newspaper that would have been in the area. And so
Exactly. Consequently,
the people of information or news starved in terms of, you know, basic things, which you mentioned, not just their local athletic teams like baseball, basketball, football, and so forth, the hockey, whatever, but also they're not getting any news in terms of their local city council, their local county or parish government, anything like that.
And
so they're really in the dark.
If they are getting it, they're getting it now, at least really 2 days later.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, and I don't want to harp on anything, but print journalism, because of the cost involved in production, the cost of ink, paper, metal to make plates to print with, has gone up so tremendously even before COVID,
Yes. Let
alone the manufacturing issues they're having with staffing there, and so costs are just keep it rising. We don't have that kind of overhead.
And transportation, too, because you've got to carry your newspaper or magazine or whatever all over the place. So
right, and in most cases nowadays, they do it by mail.
Yeah.
Well, you're already going to have it, unless you get it to the post office that morning, you've got to complete a newspaper by early afternoon, try to get it to the newspaper, to try to get it into the mailboxes the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So to do that, to finish that paper by early afternoon, that news is really pretty much the day before that. This is I went to Bruce Cowan's Eagle induction ceremony last night. I did it around 8 p.m., but it was still published at 5 a.m. this morning, the story.
Uh-huh.
That's the beauty of this, the speed factor. We can get to you when you need it. And when you want it, even more importantly.
Which is really like a... It's like a TV news crew out covering breaking news. Say if a building catches on fire or something, and they've got people out there covering that fire, you know, that building that's up in flames or whatever.
And we will, not through our website, but through our social media platforms, we will do live broadcasting, as I talked about Buddy Ball. Last time here a month ago, I hope I'm not being prophetic. My backyard, we have tornado sirens I can probably hit if I threw a tennis ball. I went out in my backyard and did a little update about a month ago as the tornado sirens were blaring, which you can hear. Like I said, in my house, you end up looking like Sylvester the Cat. You just hit the ceiling and kind of have to peel yourself off of it. It's so loud inside your house.
Yeah, and you're up on that hilltop anyway, that whole neighborhood, that mesa or whatever.
Right, right.
And I think we were, I don't know if we got it on here, but in the interview, but you know, at one point less than, I couldn't remember a tornado ever hitting or a hurricane really doing any damage. You just get a tail end of a hurricane, get a little bit of rain, some bad mosquitoes for a couple. We're getting some real weather disasters now.
All right.
We had one that hit here, if y'all remember, a few years ago. It hit the south side of town, I think around Bethel Christian School and somewhere else down that way.
We've had several over the past 4 or 5 years, but Bruce is right. We had when I was in grad school at Tech, 89, let's say, there was one, and I lived out towards Grambling, an old Grambling Road, out towards Grambling a little bit, right near Maple Street there. We had a tornado hit Grambling, and it damaged the apartment complex I lived at that time, Stadium Townhouses. I remember seeing the wall shaking. It was rather unnerving. But no, it doesn't happen very often around here. But what that goes to show you is climate change is real. Now, global warming, how much of it is man-made, I don't know. I'm sure that we haven't helped. In fact, I know we haven't. But weather is cyclical anyway. Geology has proven that. We're just living through one of Mother Nature's cycles here. And recorded history is so short in the overall timeline of our planet that we're kind of experiencing something that none of our recorded forefathers have. And that's climate change. Think about Tornado Alley. Tornado Alley has shifted southeastward, and now it's become almost Dixie Alley, which unfortunately we seem to be right in the middle of.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a big area. We should point out to the listeners, if they haven't heard the term Dixie Alley, it runs pretty much from the Louisiana line, maybe part of East Texas, all the way where to South Carolina, maybe?
Right,
and then
right.
Up into Arkansas. It's a big area. It covers probably 6 or 7 states. You know, Louisiana,
but it's been
just as
if not more active as Tornado Alley over the past 5 to 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
That's part of those changes. Bruce was right. I do not believe, and growing up in New Orleans, I've always been fascinated by weather and hurricanes. I want to say hurricanes. That's kind of that New Orleanian yad accent. I get teased about that up here.
But
to me, they're hurricanes. But I'm going to call them hurricane since I'm here in Lincoln Parish. For people. But no, I do not believe a full-strength hurricane had ever come nearly this far north as Laura did.
We're a long way from the coast up here.
They'd still be tropical storms, but usually they weren't even that. That was very rare. Usually they'd just already be downgraded to a depression or whatever. But once again, I think that's part of the truth about climate change. And again, carbon emissions, that kind of thing, I'm sure hasn't helped. But I don't know how much of this we could really, as mankind, could control anyway. I think we're just living through Earth finally making a little change. Kind of like magnetic poles, if you've read about those. The magnetic poles have shifted on us. And it's not the first time it happens. They know this. We live in interesting times. I'll leave it at that.
There was a, back when you and Bruce and I were all three still teaching at Tech, there was a boy that was studying with me in a Tech writing class. I think he was a forester or maybe a geographer. He was in either forester or geography, one of the two. And we were talking about the landmass around this area. Something came up in class about this area. And he said that this Ruston, and maybe Grambling too, but I know Ruston is in something, I want to say they call it the Washtenaw Valley Bowl, but this area is the edge, is the foothills of the Washtenaw Mountains up in west Arkansas and east Oklahoma. And it stretches over into northeast Texas and up into Oklahoma. And apparently this area around here was pretty, it wasn't vulnerable to hurricane, I mean to tornadoes, but it was pretty protected because we sit in this bowl. Like New Orleans is in a bowl, but it's below sea level. Ruston's in a bowl too, but it's up here in the foothills of the mountains.
Right.
And that protected us from tornadic activity for years. until we started getting these things. And so, it, I mean, this is proof positive. We're not invulnerable to them at all.
And if you think about that, part of it is the Mississippi River Delta. It's shown how that river has shifted over the course of time, way before recorded history and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Look between Vicksburg and West Monroe. Flat. Nothing. But you have hills on either side.
Mm-hmm.
That's because at one time there was much water running right through here. Now, I'm sure the continents looked totally different at that time. We're talking millions of years ago. But that's another part of just Mother Nature, Mother Earth. She's going to change. She's going to dance her own direction every now and then. And we're just getting to be part of that new dance.
There was a shift as recently as 160 years ago. It was like right after the Civil War, maybe. But the river has changed course. I mean, in historical memory, 150 years is not a long time.
No,
like,
not at
say
all.
Say 1,000 years or something like that. And, I mean, I think it's shifted even since the Civil War.
It
not
has.
A lot, but it has shifted its course.
Right, it definitely has. And will continue to do so now. As technology has increased and mankind has grown and gotten wiser, we know how to control that a little bit better now, or attempt to anyway, but we're never going to be able to do it totally. That's part of the sad thing about me is loving New Orleans the way I do. Eventually, what we're concerned about is probably going to happen, and things are going to change when New Orleans pretty much goes under. But it's, once again, that could be a million years in the future, too. Who knows?
Well, one of our sci-fi interviews was set in a New Orleans that was a floating city a few hundred years in the future. You know, climate change had come and the waters had gone up. And
That potential is there. Some people,
yeah.
Some experts predict that could happen by the turn of the next century.
Early 2100s,
I don't know that. I don't think I believe that. And I read up to know that other experts say, no, it won't be that fast. But I think there is a consensus that, yes, it will happen eventually.
I mean, that's pretty much the story of most of the larger cities around the world are coastal cities, like not just New Orleans, but like Houston is an example. You know, Houston's only about the elevation of Baton Rouge, which means you're going to see some major damage to Houston. We've already seen it, you know, as we speak, and it's going to get worse.
I don't know.
New York, look at London. London's having what they call, like Miami and also like Jacksonville, what they call nuisance flooding. Look at London is right there, you know, on the Thames River.
Have y'all paid attention to the recent spate of earthquakes we've had, especially in Blanchard, Louisiana, north of Shreveport, over the past month and a half?
Yeah, something about that rolled through my Facebook feed here about 4 days ago.
We've had multiple 3 to 5 earthquakes.
Yeah.
Is that from fracking?
I don't know. I'd like to say I do. I think that's potentially possible. Or it just may be other changes going on below the surface that we don't understand. As I mentioned, they do know, and people can Google it, look it up online, find plenty of information. The magnetic poles have shifted a little bit here over the past few years. They're not due north and south anymore. I want to believe they've leaned southwest to northeast, kind of. But at any rate, things are changing. And that's the great thing about being alive now. We're at a point in time where we hopefully have enough knowledge where we can adapt those kind of changes. So that's what evolution is all about, is finding ways to adapt.
They're seeing a lot of that up in Oklahoma. Those earthquakes a lot of places in Oklahoma are having those things.
Right. Well, and a lot of people realize, some people may not, we don't live that far south of the New Madrid Fault. which is a,
right.
which is a major U.S. fault. That I do believe there was a major quake in Tennessee in the 1800s, I'll say.
Yeah, about close to 200, though, yeah.
Right. And it'll happen again one day. I mean, it's part of nature.
Yeah, I think that thing was felt well into the Delta, like maybe into East Arkansas someplace. And maybe
No,
definitely East Arkansas.
I believe that one was felt way down into South Louisiana even, and would have definitely been felt here in Lincoln Parish.
I've heard the river ran backward, the Mississippi River.
That did. True.
And think of the devastation that would cause these days because of the, frankly, the larger population, the more human constructions in terms of buildings, you know, parks, anything like that, highways,
and
so forth. It would be terrible.
Hopefully we're looking to think about that kind of thing and adapt better. And that's what I mean about adapting.
Well, yeah. In San Francisco, their buildings have been hardened against earthquakes.
Right.
That is not true in Louisiana so much.
It can be done. New Orleans is working to strengthen its levees for the flooding reasons. Denmark, I believe, is a country that's done really well at that. It can be done. The thing is to try to be proactive.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to control Mother Nature, but you can adapt and try to handle it better.
Right.
Mitigate the effects.
That's what you have to do.
Wasn't it you that, when we were in grad school, that was talking to a relative like in California when the big quake hit, like in the late 80s, and you were on the phone talking to your cousin or somebody out in California when the quake went on?
I'll tell you that story. I've got a cousin who's 11 years older. She's basically a big sister to me. Grew up in West Monroe, that I told you. We spent summers up here all the time. I was watching the World Series. And the game was being played there in the Bay Area. And Al Michaels was on the air doing the pregame show. And he said, I think we're having an earthquake. And it just cut. The feed cut. And you had the literal old static snow for about 20 seconds there before the network cut in and started saying, well, you know, we think from what they just said, we believe they've had an earthquake there. Well, I ran for the phone, called my cousin's parents. I tried to call her first, and the phone didn't work. I mean, it's instant busy phone. So I called her parents, and my other cousin, who was their nephew, was with them at the time. That's the one who took me to Grambling, whose mom caught it Grambling, and he started trying to call her, and they finally got through to my cousin Karen in Oakland right before phone service just totally died because they got so overwhelmed. So they knew she was okay. They knew that all her dishes, everything had fallen off the wall. She had a lot of that kind of damage, but no structural damage to her home, and she was all right. And I don't think they talked again for 5-6 days because of the damage to the phone system.
Oh, my aunt grew up outside of Fresno, and they had friends living near San Francisco. She went to college, and she said it was pretty terrifying to sit through one of those. It was like, I mean, it was, you know, the equivalent to sitting through a hurricane, and you're right there in the middle of the thing. It's just, it's awesome.
Yeah, but
terrifying.
But a hurricane, I disagree, because I'd much rather a hurricane, because you see a hurricane coming, you know it's coming. An earthquake, you have no idea. Imagine being those people, if you remember I believe it was a triple-decker highway system.
Yeah, just pancaked, yeah.
Yeah, imagine that. No warning, just nothing you can do. You can prepare for a hurricane. You have minutes to prepare for a tornado. An earthquake, there's nothing you can do.
Were you, I guess you weren't doing any writing for journalistic type stuff at that time. We were just doing this stuff for our literature classes, so you never covered anything like that as far as a natural disaster or anything. Or have you
covered anything
like since then?
I covered the 2 years ago Sunday, I covered that tornado that wiped out Ruston.
And killed those two people, yeah. That
I mean, as on the phone, as we were talking, within 30 minutes, I found out that there were deaths reported. I wasn't sure at that time. I was editor of the Leader. I wanted to know what had happened. So I tried to get downtown. I got as far as the overpass of coming off the interstate exit 167, and Ruston Police Chief Steve Rogers met me. He was there directing the no traffic was there, but he was standing there. And I told him, look, I just want to go check the office. And he told me, Scotty, go home. He said, the power lines that down everywhere, go home. And I'm like, look, can I walk in? He's like, no. Can I park here and walk in? He's like, no. Well, suddenly I looked behind him and I realized the old powwow gone. I mean,
right.
There was very little of it left.
Well, and
so I told him, all right, I'll go on home.
You know, 167?
Right.
Yeah, and the hotel was down.
I was right there at that hotel. I had no idea the roof was gone. It was pitch black. There were no lights.
Right, right. And all the lines were on the streets.
So,
the trees were on the streets.
So I go and drive up to turn around on that overpass there area. And as I drove past what used to be the powwow, I could hear the tires crunching because I remember calling my wife and telling her, I'm driving over what was left of the powwow.
God.
Right.
So I came home and we just sat there and blankly stared and tried to find out as much as we could. And I may have dozed for 15, 20 minutes at some point until daybreak and got up and talked to Nancy Bergeron, longtime local legendary reporter. We made our plan to try to hook up and go meet, which was at Louisiana Tech because we knew then about the extensive damage to the athletic area.
Oh, yeah.
How amazing was it, what happened in the baseball stadium, when you had those then brand-new apartments right there, right next door, untouched? Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a razor. That's the difference between a tornado and a hurricane. It was just,
mm-hmm.
I was well, 1 mile north of the path.
This one was a jumper, too, up and down, up and down, up and down. You can look at the path of the damage and see. It hopped.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It would come
and it traveled. That thing traveled. It started over in East Texas.
It hopped
Toledo Bend and came all the way up here to Ruston, our area, you know.
It jumped from the baseball stadium, J.C. Love Field, and then landed over there behind the old Temple Baptist Church complex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those trees were
then
long.
It jumped again at Deepa and where, unfortunately, the death happened.
Oh, that graveyard over there, Greenwood Cemetery up on the hilltop.
I've got Knuckleberry there. Yeah,
yeah, my aunt and uncle, whose daughter you worked with at the old News Star, I mean, her folks are buried up there. And, I mean, there was, if you went down that hill into that neighborhood, Bruce and I had just picked up his car, just dropped off his car at a repair shop here in town, and I had not seen the damage because we were without power. So when we got out, he said, let's go and see the damage, and we did. Like, I felt like rubberneckers almost, but we got out there, and, I mean, it looked like doomsday. I mean, I swear to you, there were power lines down all over the place. There was a house up there on the hilltop there, you know, across the street cemetery, and a tree had fallen across the people's carport, and it was caved in, and a woman was out, probably the owner was out walking around the grounds, you know, trying to pick up the debris that she could get. But, I mean, her car was trapped in the carport. You know, you couldn't get it out.
Right.
The only way I could get my arms around what happened was somebody put a drone up the next day, and I'm sure you saw the drone video of it flying over the path of the tornado.
Actually, because of we had access, and Nancy took that ride, but at noon on the 25th, Nancy rode with the governor on a flyover of the area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we published those papers, so yes. But, hey, Nancy and I met probably around 6:30 at Tech Football Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And as we went over toward the baseball stadium, there is literally the concrete ceiling there. If anybody remembers, there was a huge chunk of the concrete ceiling. I don't know who owns that piece.
Oh, yeah.
Ripped away.
They just ripped it right out.
Had been ripped off and landed right in the middle of Alabama.
Oh my God.
It was surreal. It jumped again, landed back there, like I said, back behind the old Temple Baptist, now the Sheriff's complex, where it did the damage to that neighborhood, including taking two lives, wiped out the hotel, the powwow, jumped over the interstate, landed out there again near Burgess Road, and did damage out there.
The northbound lane of the bridge looked like it had been scoured by like a sandblaster.
Bent metal, but you know they got kind of railings there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if people tried to walk along there across it,
right.
to keep them from falling. But we're either gone or all twisted. It was incredible. Yeah.
And we were still driving across
that neighborhood. It's over there right off of Tech Camps, that huge neighborhood, all that University Hills over there, but it's right west of Tech. You know, you cross, it's a Tech Drive, you cross that and you're in that neighborhood. It's all those, like, roller coaster type hills. Over there. It looks like it does around your house. That neighborhood on the hilltop, we've got another friend that was another colleague of ours teaching now at LSU Alexandria, but they kept the house here. And, I mean, their neighborhood, they had two huge pine trees plunged right through their house. It plunged through the back side of the house where two of their three bedrooms are and just took out those two bedrooms. So they had to have extensive repair done on their house.
Oh, yeah. One of my English colleagues, he and his wife were in their bedroom, and one of those huge pine trees fell through their living room. If they'd been in the other room, there'd have been two more casualties because, you know, it's just boom. I just got lucky.
Was that what you're talking about? That retired here pretty recently?
Yeah, David.
You know, another guy that all three of us stud with, and he's moved away now, retired, moved away, Bob Youngman. I mean, took out one or both of their old houses over there, and they lived over there by Nathan and his wife. And
Eddie Blick, longtime journalism teacher after my time at Tech, although because I was still involved, he became a friend. He and his wife's home was badly damaged, yeah. That they were out towards like the springs where it first kind of touched down in Lincoln Parish.
Well, my mom had been sick like the year before, and I was staying at her place, and I was up and listening to the news, and they kept saying tornado coming, and I was looking out the window. We live across the street from Hillcrest. Be careful, batten down the hatches. I'm looking out the window. And usually, like, the rain will kick up, and there's barely any rain. There was no wind whatsoever. And then they said, okay, it's gone. And I went to bed. And it wasn't until I got up the next day that I knew how bad it was. Like, I had no idea. I thought, okay, just another, you know, one of those false alarms. Well, it was not.
No, I was awake, and I was reading or watching a movie, I don't know which, because my back was hurting as it always does, and I was trying to get my back easy. And I woke my mother up, and this is probably right before it came rolling through, and I heard the storm siren. And we still had power at that time. It wasn't quite the town yet. And they said what Bruce just said, like batten down the hatches, it's coming through. And we got the warning from the National Weather Service, and it came over the emergency channel and everything. And I start hearing the siren. You know, my house is much closer to downtown than y'all's is, so we can hear. You know, Ruston has a storm siren, and it is loud as the devil.
Well,
and I can hear that.
Hey,
we're a mile off downtown, so I could hear.
Steve, there are about six or seven of those storm siren fans. There's one at the corner of
downtown.
There's one at the corner of Ashland and the service road there. So when I'm talking about, you can hear them from my house. You should not miss them. They are deafening. Inside my house when they go off.
Well, this one, like I said, we're just a mile off downtown. So, I mean, you could walk downtown from my house, and we could hear that thing wailing like a banshee. And I woke my mother up. I said, you better get ready and get in the hall. There's a tornado coming. We got in the hall, and pretty quickly we lost power. So we went on to bed amidst not having power. It's gone. We had lots and lots of trees in the park here across the street. I showed you the trees when my mother had her big birthday.
That park was badly hit.
Oh, yeah. In fact, some of it I didn't notice until after we had the snowstorm back in February. But the lower part of the park near my cousin's house, kind of east of us. There were some big trees with big boles, so they had to be probably close to 100-year-old trees. They were down, but also the far west side of the park, closer to downtown, it had lots of down trees, too.
Talking about how weird it was, you have to realize I live, and you know where I live, I live physically a mile at most from both the Tech Baseball Stadium and the Detroit itself. We have huge pine trees. You know my house.
Yeah.
If something happens, we could get wiped out.
one of the steeper hilltops in town. Yeah, I mean, you go down that hill.
I watched the wind blow sideways headed south.
Right.
There was the inflow for the tornado. But it never got out here. I mean, we didn't have much. We had very few limbs down here. It was strange.
Oh, yeah, we didn't have to pick up limbs in the yard. It was that, you know.
And we were less than a mile from the worst of it.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And then again, in August, you have more.
Right.
We're at work at the Leader, and I'm watching the front door. I mean, it sounds like somebody's beating to get in the door. 75-mile-per-hour winds gusting to 85 or 90.
The hurricane was worse in Ruston than it was in New Orleans because it kind of went around New Orleans and then
it didn't affect New Orleans at all.
Right. It did a hook as it went up to Louisiana and came back and hit Ruston.
Correct. And I remember seeing that on my cell phone because we'd lost power to the Leader early on. But I'm like, that's an eyeball coming into the parish. You can still see the eye.
Yeah,
because it hadn't disintegrated or
that
dissipated
is supposed
or whatever when it got here.
Previously, that was supposed to be impossible.
Right. It never happened.
I couldn't believe it.
It was always
I get out twice to go get pictures of damaged trees down, that kind of thing. And, I mean, I'm out there driving in those so many hurricane-strength winds. Being as somebody who was used to hurricanes, I never thought you couldn't. You know, I would have bet you my house that could not happen.
I was just about to ask you that. So, because you're doing everything online, I mean, do you foresee doing like having a weather component to your Lincoln Parish Journal and having like a meteorologist on there? Or? Just taking
things for
the National Weather Service report, or
I've got a story. I talked to Kip Franklin, the Lincoln Parish Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness. He let me know. In fact, we posted this morning that we are in a slight risk this afternoon. Well, that later on was enhanced. We are now in an enhanced area, so we have even more chance of bad weather than we did earlier this morning. But yes, and I talked to the Weather Service, and that story is in today's Lincoln Parish Journal. And as needs be, as it gets closer this afternoon, I will continue posting updates and that kind of thing.
Do we have anything that's on the way in? Do you know?
It was all still, I mean, before the podcast started, it was still all out toward Texas right now. But we have 100% chance of thunderstorms by 6 p.m. So it's headed this way.
Within the next a little over 3 hours from now.
Correct.
We might should have talked to you tomorrow.
unless I'm too busy tomorrow. But yeah.
Right.
Hopefully not.
Well, I wanted to talk about some other stuff. Good news. When I moved back to Ruston, you know how it is. You go off to school and you leave Ruston forever, and then 12 years later you've got a U-Haul and you're moving back because now you have a wife and kids. And suddenly it doesn't look like such a horrible place to live. Anyway, those early years I would drive through town at 3:30 to pick up my kids. You could have blown up a bomb in the middle of downtown Ruston. Nobody would have been hurt. Cars, it looked like a ghost town. And fast forward, 2021, and downtown's hopping. You know, we've got restaurants, good restaurants. We've got businesses in these buildings. You can't find a parking place on Friday night.
Dentist offices, lawyer's offices.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of business downtown.
So, you know, for our less fortunate other towns, what did Ruston do right to, you know, bring back that downtown after we thought it had died?
It was all about vision. We've had strong mayors here going back since
we've been lucky.
But Ronnie Walker had a vision, and he's made it work so far. And he's pulled young people together. And I think that plays a role. And when I say young, I mean young enough to be our children, let's face it. But they know some things too and all. And that's some of the leadership you see at Experience Ruston. The Chamber of Commerce is really done well here recently, but especially the Visitors Convention Bureau. I'm not a guy. Tax would concern me. I'm a middle of the road guy when it comes to politics. I'm a. Can there be a moderate conservative, liberal? I don't know, but I can be for taxes, but I don't mind paying taxes for the right reason.
Right.
But we've spent that money well. If you go out to the Ruston Sports Complex,
talk about that for a minute, because that's the most recent building project.
Well, I was out there 2 weekends ago. Last weekend it was, but we had a lot of rain even early that Saturday morning. 2 weekends ago, or 3 weekends ago, the opening day of Ruston Youth Baseball, and the week before that was visiting tournament. There are thousands and thousands of cars in that complex. Some of those people are coming in from out of town. They're coming here and they're spending money here. They're at least in our restaurant. If it's a 2-day tournament, they may be spending nights here.
Well, yeah.
You have so many what they call travel ball leagues right now for baseball, softball, where it's not your local teams. I mean, they travel. There's money involved. But those are all often the caliber of athletes who go on to play college and that kind of thing. Those parents are willing to invest and spend that kind of money for travel ball. And Ruston is taking advantage of that right now. If you go out there on a given Saturday, you can see it in the number of people out there.
Right.
And the complex that we have here, the New Tech Baseball Stadium, which they'll host Conference USA, and maybe even get a NCAA regional the way the Bulldogs are playing this year. After having to be road warriors, or then COVID warriors, and
right.
How much of a season last year.
Yeah, we finished that project just in time for COVID.
Right. well, actually, the sports complex, yeah. But now you're finally really seeing the we had the Dixie World Series, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
But then COVID hit. But now you're really starting to see that come back. And the thing about Ruston is it's weird. People were worried about the loss of sales tax during COVID. That did not really happen for whatever reason in Ruston.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, we lost some restaurants.
Right.
Most of them were takeout only. But the people still supported them. And
right.
Why, I'm not sure. I think we do have a lot more young people. Employment has helped. Look at Frosty Factory. It just announced it's doubling in size.
Dolph Williams. Yeah,
do you want to refresh our readers' recollection about what exactly the Frosty Factory is? Because that's a great local story that nobody has heard
it. A lot of people don't realize, and as a New Orleanian, I get it better than both. All right, back in my college days, you had Wilmart out there,
right?
Old Chatham Highway.
Old Chatham Highway, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my dad, the local Baptist preacher, worked really hard to keep Ruston dry. I remember being paired with my best friend's dad, old deacon of the church. And we went door to door to vote Ruston dry. Well, what that meant was, a college of 8,000 thirsty students got out a map and said, where is the nearest legal alcohol that we can go and load up our trucks, you know, come back and party? And that was Wilmart on the border of, just across the border in Jackson.
Right. I mean, we're talking right across.
Yeah.
The parish line.
I mean, they picked it on purpose. They wanted to be a wet parish by a dry parish. And especially with our large university. Okay, so proceed with your story now that we know what Wilmart is.
So anyway, the owner of Wilmart, their son, actually made a machine. And he thought about old-fashioned ices and plushies and created a machine to make frozen margarita-type, daiquiri-type.
Yeah, and frozen daiquiris. And his mom had started with a blender, but they kept buying all the blenders in Walmart.
So
they would break.
So he actually he was creative enough and talented enough.
He's a tech engineer.
Just for his own.
Yeah, he's got an engineering degree from Tech.
Yeah.
Just for his own, their own use. But it became so popular that people and Texans would go out and go take jobs elsewhere and tell people about it. And it caught on. Well, then by the mid-'80s there, daiquiri stores exploded across, especially the New Orleans area and around here.
And the famous drive-through daiquiri, which Louisiana is known for worldwide, was created.
Correct.
But that couldn't be in Ruston because
all that was born out of Wilmart. The crazy the crazy name.
it was the William
Purple
Walmart.
Purple People Eater. Those all came from Wilmart. People don't realize that.
Yeah, the mama would create these mixes and name them.
Right, correct.
You've ever had a frozen margarita, a frozen daiquiri, a frozen Bellini, you know, all those frozen drinks. It was probably...
The machine was made it here in Ruston.
Yeah.
Right.
And they'll ship them out 25 at a time.
People started asking him to build more and more of them. And by, the early 90s, he had his own factory. I mean, that they opened up the Frosty factory. And built their own machines, and it continued growing in size to this day. Where now they're shipping them out internationally.
Oh yeah,
And that money is coming back to Ruston. I mean, that is all locally produced, locally
good
earned
manufacturing
money.
Jobs. They have a big multiplier effect. Like every dollar one of those worker makes, they go out and spend it in Ruston, and then it gets re-spent again.
And the money that coming in worldwide to purchase those are going to a Ruston business that is taxed.
That's right.
The workers and the people there spend that money here. I mean, it's a win-win, double-win situation for Ruston.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what would New Orleans be without frozen daiquiris in the French Quarter to get on a hot day and walk around while you're, you know, it cuts the sweat a little bit.
what I love is the fact that you can't have an open container driving in Louisiana, although obviously that happened. I was driving way before any of that happened, believe me.
Right.
Now you can't. What are you going to do with your frozen daiquiri?
You got a lid on it. You just can't put your straw in it.
There you go.
So are you going to do for the journal, will you do any kind of human interest stories like something on Bob Williams? Or
Oh, we if, go look about 2 weeks ago, and you'll see a huge one that talked about this history and everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've even done when they, I did that the day they held their grand opening or groundbreaking to expand to double their factory size.
Oh, my goodness. Business is mm-hmm. good. You would think that after this time the market would be saturated, but it sounds like it's still taking off. Well, you know, like he told us, having these machines in New Orleans, you have people from around the world come here,
that,
and they
which,
have it.
Which is why they ship them internationally now.
Exactly. They want them back home, yeah. It was a great sales, you know, technique to put them where millions of people will experience them every year. So, yeah, it increases the demand.
And I'm sure it all happened because some Louisiana Tech students went back home to New Orleans to work and wanted to start and figured out, hey, I can start a pretty good little side business here with just one of those machines.
Right.
And mm-hmm. boom, there you have it.
We want to thank Scott for coming on our podcast. We're going to break in here and listen to the rest of it next week and give us a chance to talk about local stuff and local issues. And certainly wish him well as he continues to get this local news outlet off the ground. For the Louisiana Anthology Podcast, I'm Rick McGee.
I'm Steve Payne. We certainly do want to thank Scott. We also want to urge all of you, if you have a local newspaper or a local online paper or journal or magazine or anything like this that serves your area, please do support it, as well as your local, you know, not only local media, you know, broadcast media, but even podcasts like us. Do support those things because oftentimes these are the only real sources of news for an area, particularly smaller areas. You've got some smaller towns that have actually lost their newspapers entirely. So do, you know, do support these endeavors of these kind of digital pioneers, really. These people are kind of carving out new territories and exploring very unexplored territories at that. So do support the Lincoln Parish Journal or the Natchitoches Parish Journal or any of these little endeavors like this. So, again, thank you to Scott for coming on and speaking out with us this week. We also want to thank all of you for tuning in, and we hope that you'll join us for next week's edition of the Louisiana Anthology Podcast. Bye for now.